David and Goliath. And what we did is, I remember, and I haven't gone over it, I'm going from memory. We looked at the whole chapter and we looked at the sections. And I think, going from memory, Anne always takes extensive notes, so she can tell me I'm wrong later. I think there were five sections. And what we saw at the start 2 weeks ago is that the storyteller doesn't go chronologically. So he doesn't start at the beginning of David and then take us through it year after year. He tends to put together clumps of material when he wants to make a specific point. So David and Goliath, it's lots of material put together, and we see, as we look at it, that the whole thrust of this story isn't David. It's not David and his faith. It's the God of Israel. And so we are going to direct our attention to God. So in this section, then, from verse 28 down to verse 39, you get the sense that David is encountering three Goliaths. There's the famous one, the one that we'll see next time. We come across him in verse 40. We've already heard his taunts. We've heard his boasts. He's come, hasn't he, every morning for 40 days in front of the armies of Israel, and he's taunted them, and he's ridiculed them, and he's mocked them. And the armies of Israel have been terrified, quivering in their camp there. So we've seen this guy, this mighty man. We've seen how tall he is. We've seen how impressive he is. This Goliath, then, is the third of the Goliaths that David meets, and we'll see more about him next week. The first Goliath, in a sense, is Eliab, his older brother. So you meet Eliab again for the second time in verse 28. Now, we first saw Eliab when Samuel went to the home of Jesse to choose the next king of Israel. And you may remember that Eliab was the first we saw. We saw how handsome he was, how impressive he was. We saw Samuel say to himself, "Eliab must be the man whom God has chosen." But God whispered in his ear, "No, not this one." And that led to the most important verse in 1 Samuel: man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. And in one sense, the whole story of David and Goliath reinforces that message that men look at the outward, but God looks at the heart. So Eliab might have been impressive to look at, but God was seeing beyond his beauty and his stature, and God was weighing up his heart. And so we meet Eliab for the second time here. So let's read those verses again. And as always, you need to think about why the author has put them here. So remember now, David's been sent with provisions to the army, and he comes along. And when he arrives, he sees this Goliath and he hears Goliath taunting them. And David is outraged. Who is this man that he should mock the living God? Who is this uncircumcised Philistines that he should defy the armies of the living God? We can see that in verse 26, where it reads, David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistines that he should defy the armies of the living God?" So David turns up 17 years old, and he's there outraged and challenging the Israelites in their cowardice. Now look at verse 28. Eliab, his older brother, heard what David was saying to the men. So he heard verse 26, David saying, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine?" And Eliab, the older brother, his comment drips with contempt. Contempt for David. You hear it, don't you? In his words, "Why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness?" There's contempt then from Eliab to David, to David's words about the uncircumcised Philistines and the armies of the living God. And then he goes on to say this, doesn't he? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. So here's the first obstacle, Goliath number one. And you see the reference in that verse to the heart. Now, this is another way of the writer drawing attention to the fact that man looks at the outward appearance, God looks at the heart. Now, Eliab thinks he knows the heart of his little brother. And he thinks that his little brother's heart is full of pride, full of boasting, full of arrogance. And what our author wants us to do as we read verse 28 is to recognize that Eliab has it wrong. He doesn't see what David's heart is like. So you got there, I know your pride and the insolence of your heart. And this man, Eliab, he's taking David's words about God and the living God, and he interprets them as pride and insolence and arrogance. And then he challenges David with contempt. And you can see that contempt, can't you? In that phrase, where have you left those few sheep? You are nothing more than a little shepherd boy looking after a few sheep in the wilderness. And David's reply in verse 29 is apparently, so they say, it's hard to translate from the Hebrew. The best idea is, what have I done wrong now? I'm feeling tempted to ask you a question, but if I do that, I always have to remember that we are being zoomed and other people may not be able to hear what you've said. But if you look at that phrase in verse 29, what have I done now? It's giving you the sense, isn't it, that this isn't new, that David's had this hassle before, that David is regarded with contempt by his older brother, and that's long-standing, that he's used to it, he's known it before, he's experienced this kind of contempt and derision from his brothers before. And so David, we're getting an insight into what his family life was like, how he was battling against ridicule and mockery and contempt within his own family. So here's what I want to ask you. If you look back in the Old Testament, go backwards, who does this remind you of? Joseph and his brothers, exactly there, okay? If you go back even further, who does this remind you of? Way back in the beginning, Cain and Abel. And if you go from David and Saul and go way into the future, who do you meet? Who was held in contempt by his brothers? Jesus was. Now, whilst Jesus was the older brother, he was held in contempt by his younger. So there's a very interesting theme in the scriptures, and it's the theme of the relationship between brothers, and how from the very beginning of human history, there has been this rift, conflict, division between brothers, and this then culminates in the story of Jesus. And you can read John 7, and you can read how his brothers were treating Jesus with contempt, asking him whether he was going to go up to Jerusalem and take part in the feast, telling Jesus that no teacher does things in secret, that he should go and be open and do his work in front of everybody. The contempt of his brothers to Jesus is something that's being prefigured here by David and Eliab. So here's his first Goliath moment, if you like, in our story. And then from verse 31 down to verse 39, you meet Goliath number two. And Goliath number two is the person of Saul. And so what we have is this, verse 31, the words which David spoke were heard. They reported them to Saul, and so Saul sent for David. And David said to Saul, let no man's heart, so look out for every reference to the heart. God looks at the heart. Let no man's heart fail because of Goliath. Your servant will go. I'll go and fight with this Philistine. Now, how ridiculous those words must have sounded. This young boy, 17, no experience, no military training, is willing to go up against the great champion of the army of the Philistines, this giant. How ridiculous the whole thing must have sounded. And so Saul says to David, verse 33, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. You're young. And the Hebrew is emphasizing the youth and inexperience of David. Contrast that to the years of military service of Goliath. All his training, all his knowledge, his experience. He's a veteran of many conflicts, hugely experienced. You cannot fight against him. And then David does this very interesting thing. He tells us what it's been like for him as a shepherd. And so verse 34, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And whenever a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Now your servant has killed both lion and bear. Who is this compared? What is this compared to an uncircumcised Philistine? He'll be just like a lion. He's just like a bear. He's no different, says David. And he is the one who is defying the armies of the living God. Then we come to the most important verse in the chapter. So in the whole of the chapter, verse 37 stands at its heart. The Lord, who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. So Saul said to David, then go then, and may the Lord be with you. But go dressed in my armor. So Saul clothed David with his armor, put a bronze helmet on his head, and clothed him with a coat of mail. Now at that point, David would have looked more ridiculous than ever. And it's not, I don't think it's taking things too far to say that the writer wants a moment of humor when he reaches this point in the story. Because here's David, and the coat of mail reaches the floor, and the helmet is too big for his head, and he's standing there like a little hobbit. If you've ever seen Lord of the Rings, he's like a little hobbit in a grown man's armor, and he looks absolutely ridiculous. And then the next bit, which the Hebrew is difficult to translate, the next bit seems to be that what David does is he tries to take a few steps dressed in this armor, and he can't do it. He totters and falls, and he looks absurd. How can he possibly go out against Goliath when he's dressed so ridiculously? And so the section ends with David taking off the armor and he casts them aside. Now, Saul stands as another Goliath, because what the message Saul gives is you're too young, you're too inexperienced, it's too hopeless, it's too big for you, you'll never do it, it's beyond your capabilities, and even if you think you can, then you're not good enough. You're not good enough in yourself. You have to dress up in all this armor if you stand a chance against Goliath. And David has to counter what Saul's reasoning is telling him. You're too young, you're too small, you're too ridiculous. And if you're going to do it, well, may the Lord be with you. That's not a vote of confidence. May the Lord be with you, but you may as well put on my helmet. And some people think that Saul, in getting David to dress up in this manner, is adding contempt to David. He's not supporting him, maybe. He wants him to look and feel ridiculous in the light of what he's suggesting he'll do. Now, David meets Saul in two ways. And this is really the point of this little section. The first is David looks back. He looks back, doesn't he, at his past experience. I kept my father's sheep, and when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it. So he's looking back to his experience as a shepherd and how he rescued lambs from the very mouths of lions and bears. And what you need to be clear about here is that God doesn't miraculously step in to rescue these lambs. He doesn't give David miraculous strength like he did Samson. David is the one who goes out and he strikes the lion or he strikes the bear and rescues the lamb. It looks, if you were watching it, perfectly remarkable, but not supernatural. There's nothing supernatural about this. It's not feats of super strength or anything like that. It's David going out to rescue the lambs, and he's doing it by himself, if you like. Ordinarily, if you want. Courageously, yes, but not supernaturally. The key is this. The Lord, verse 37, that's why this is the key verse. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear, he will. So David sees his past experiences from a God-centered point of view. And this is crucial in the life of David. David's, and now what's the best word? Mindset, worldview, David's frame of mind, David's outlook. He sees God in everything and in every way. So he looks back and he says, it was God who enabled me. But again, I've got to stress to you now, nothing miraculous, not God directly intervening and shutting the mouth of the lion, nothing like that. David is looking at it like that. He's regarding it like that. It's his viewpoint. David understands his experience from the point of view of God. It was God who was with me. It was God who enabled me. It was God who delivered the lambs to me. Now, I hope I'm making this point. I feel a little bit like I did this morning when I said, I'm not sure if I can quite convey this to you. I'm here again tonight. Don't think it was miraculous, the delivery of lambs from lions and bears. It wasn't. It was David acting, taking responsibility, being courageous, and David then thinking, seeing, understanding it as God given, God enabled me. And so looking back, what he then does is he looks forward and he says, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And that's key. The key is how you understand things. The key is taking a God-centered view of things. Seeing your life, your past, your experiences from the point of view of God and having confidence in that God for the now and for the future. That's the idea here. So 2 weeks ago, we talked about confidence in God, and David is a demonstration in this chapter of what confidence in God looks like. And it's not confidence that God will be miraculous. It's not confidence that God will be supernatural. It's confidence that God will be present with you, will be, if you like, the God who is with you in whichever situation you're in, enabling you to live for his glory and for his praise. And when you go down then, as we may do next week, when we go down from verse 40 into the actual encounter between David and Goliath, what stands out for you is how ordinary it was. David takes the sling, doesn't he? He takes some stones and he does the old thing that we used to do in Sunday school, and he sets the stone and it hits Goliath in the forehead. It's very ordinary. No miracle, no divine intervention, no lightning coming from the sky. God doesn't stop the sun in its tracks, does he? It's nothing like that. It's simple, it's ordinary, it's everyday, it's plain, it's boring, it's very, very, if you like, unexciting. But God is in it all, and that's what David says. God sees it, and he puts God at the center of it. And he has what you call, if you want to use this phrase, he has a God-centered outlook. And I'm very much opposed, you know that, I'm very much opposed to saying, right, let's all go out and be like David. That's not what it's about. Some of the books written on David and Goliath talk about David's faith. And they say David's faith triumphs. And this isn't about David's faith. It's not about David as an example of how we should be. We said 2 weeks ago, this isn't a story about how you get your own Goliaths, these big giants you have to face, face them down, if you like. It's not that. This is a book about God. And if you bring God into your thoughts, if you interpret your situation from God's point of view, bring God into your experiences. See the hand of God in your situations. Look back and bring God into your reflections. Looking back is a very difficult thing. We look back, didn't we, at the start of this year? We look back at the end of last year. And looking back is a very tricky thing. And if you're going to look back, I look back maybe too much. Some of you, I think, look back a little bit too much. If you look back, then look back and bring God into your thoughts and see what God has done. See what's happened to you and interpret that from the vantage point of God. That's what David is doing. And as he does that, he then feels able to face what the whole armies of Israel couldn't face, this man, because he was bringing God, and God was in his thoughts in that particular situation. We've said before, and it's another theme you can pursue if you want, in the Old Testament and in the New, when is it right and when is it wrong to look back? And the Bible tells you, for most of the time, it's wrong to look back. The only time when it's right to look back is when you do so by bringing God into your thoughts. Now, I want you to turn, just to kind of underline this, if you will, to Psalm 77. Now, I was thinking about looking at this psalm in more detail on another occasion. Psalm 77, then. And Psalm 77 neatly divides into two. And in the first part, the psalmist is thinking about all his troubles, all that is afflicting him. He's thinking about his distress. And you can see, can't you, from verse 1, I cried out to God with my voice, to God with my voice to give ear to me. In the day of my trouble, I sought the Lord. Now, here's this poor psalmist, and he's just overwhelmed with distress. He's troubled in verse 3. He's complaining. He can't sleep, verse 4. I'm so troubled that I can't speak, in verse 4. And he's doing this. And what he's doing, what's the reason for his trouble, is he's looking back in the wrong way. He's thinking about the past in an unhelpful way. So look at verse 6. I call to remembrance my song in the night. I meditate within my heart My spirit makes diligent search. I, verse 5, I consider the days of old, the years of ancient times. He's looking back. And what he does in looking back, he thinks that what it was like then is better than it was now. And he looks back and he thinks, all that has gone. What's left in the present is nothing. I've got nothing now. It's all gone for me. It's over for me. It's lost to me. The present is just nothing compared to the past. And so he continues down to verse 9, and then we get to the turning point of the psalm, which is verse 10. This is my anguish, he says. But, and then there comes a great contrast for the psalmist. I will remember the years of the Most High, of the right hand. I will remember the works of the Lord. So what he does, he changes from looking back and thinking how much better it was then, and he remembers God. And he'd been thinking about God before, but he was thinking about God as a God of the past. And then in that verse, he brings God into the present moment, and he says God hasn't changed. This great God who has done great things is the same God today. And if I think of that, God present with me, the living God here with me, the same God who has done great things is the God who is here with me in the present moment, then everything has changed. And you can see it, can't you? From verse 10 all the way down, he's rejoicing in God. He says, God, you are the God who does wonders, and I'll tell everybody about you, God. He's changed his thinking from the past was better and God has stopped to God is present and God is here. Now, Psalm 77, it doesn't seem to be a psalm of David, but it's very much linked to the story of Israel and the Philistines. And so maybe it has some connection to David and Goliath. So let's come back then to 1 Samuel 17. Our time is going. From verse 28 then down to verse 39, there are three Goliaths, three major challenges to David. And what we take away from this is verse 37. It's the Lord. And you know what we mean by the Lord? The Lord is the covenantal name of God. Sometimes you read about God as God in the Old Testament. Other times you'll see him referred to as the Lord, as we have here in verse 37. When you read the Lord, it's the God of the covenant. The God who set up a covenant with Abraham and then with Moses and will later do so with David. That God who's in a special relationship through his covenant. And David says this uncircumcised Philistine who's not in the covenant, he's excluded from that. Who is he when you think of the covenantal God, our God, who has made us his people and has chosen us for himself? So the covenant is in view in verse 37, and it's David's thoughts of God that make the whole situation different. And it's because he brings God into his thoughts that David then has confidence to go to face Goliath in verse 40. So we've got David the shepherd boy, and he slays Goliath as a shepherd boy. That's very much what we'll see, that it's the shepherd who takes on the soldier in the rest of the chapter. And whenever you see a reference to a shepherd, you go forward to Jesus, who is the good shepherd. The good shepherd who lays down his life for his sheep. And there's a contrast here, because what David does is he seeks to rescue the lambs from the mouth of the lion and the mouth of the bear. And Isaiah will talk about that. But David, he risks his life in going to rescue the lambs. But Jesus takes that a step further, doesn't he? And he says, when the good shepherd sees the wolf coming, he doesn't flee as a hireling would. He goes and he lays down his life. David was willing to do that, but he didn't. Jesus then does lay down his life for the sake of his sheep. So let's pray, shall we?